The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Monday, January 17th, Hugh Hewitt live on the West Coast this morning as a pretty big winter storm slams into the eastern seaboard. North Carolina and Virginia have seen the worst of it already with up to 12 inches of snow in North Carolina, 6 in western Virginia, but it's moving on up the coast now into New York and Boston and Maine and New Hampshire. Safe travels on this Martin Luther King holiday to you who are on the road, and a happy Martin Luther King holiday to all of you. Football yesterday, 49ers beat the Cowboys. Eagles got crushed by the Buccaneers. Poor Philly. Chiefs got their way with the Steelers. Big Ben is retired and gone, we think. The Bengals are not the Bengals. They beat the Raiders. And the country rejoices. The Buffalo Bills beat the Patriots. Tonight, Cardinals-Rams game on. Biggest story over the weekend comes out of Virginia. On Saturday, shortly after Glenn Youngkin was inaugurated, in a very inspiring moment and with a great speech, he mandated the end of the mandated K-12 mask policy beginning a week from today. In an interview with Fox News Sunday, Youngkin said he will consider all options to preserve an opt-out for parents from local mask mandates. He was immediately met with resistance from one of the largest, the Arlington School District. My phone number, by the way, is 1-800-520-1234. I believe the Youngkin executive order ending mandatory masking of children in schools is longed for by parents across the United States. There will be some parents who are more cautious and who like the mask mandates, but I don't think this is close. Educrats don't want to take the masks off, and the educrats are not going to win this one, I don't believe. A number of law professors surveyed the Virginia governor's powers in an emergency last night, concluding he's on very firm ground. But the new governor extended a peace branch and said, I don't think Arlington District listened to parents. I'm hoping all school districts listen to parents. I do, too. If they do, the mask mandates will be gone. If you have an opinion on mask mandates in school and you are a parent, you must be the parent of a child in school now. 1-800-520-1234. I know my daughter wants them gone, but her kids are small, right? They're very tiny, little elementary school kids. Very little risk. All three of them have already had COVID. One of them's not in school yet. And she's just adamant this is interfering with their learning. She's not very political, very pro-vaccine as I am. I'm boosted. She will be boosted shortly. And everybody needs to let their school districts know where they are on this. And I think especially in Virginia, I think Virginians are going to back their. Tonga assesses the damage after a tsunami and a volcano. And that was something to see. If you didn't see it, go find it. It generated a shock wave around the world. Ash 100,000 feet high. The eruption was heard 5,000 miles away in Alaska, an area the size of New England, blanketed by an ashen smoke plume. That will not be enough, however, to change atmospheric temperatures. People thought that originally not happening. Financial Times reports that we are expecting 3 rate hikes from the Fed this year. Omicron inflation drive down the U.S. growth outlook to 3.3%. Brian Westbury on this show, our economist, our go-to economist, has repeatedly said the sugar high will continue for a while. It's going to be a 3% positive sugar high this year, but it's going to be declining, and it's not going to feel like a 3.3% growth. Boy, is Joe Biden going to get crushed. To sway unvaccinated, the Wall Street Journal reports new tactics are tried at funeral homes and on radio shows. Omicron is spurring a new COVID-19 relief plan in Congress. If this is more PPP and less direct payments, I'm for it. PPP keeps businesses open. A third round of PPP might be necessary for those businesses hardest hit by Omicron. They need to, however, be very open. They ignored some key venues last time. They ignored a number of different businesses very hard hit by Omicron, especially music venues. Hopefully they'll repair that. The Telegraph on Sunday ran a great story, which I tweeted out. Many of you read. Omicron becomes a blessing in disguise for Britain's economic recovery. The less severe variant in the UK leads people to conclude that we are in the COVID endgame. Over the weekend, we watched a hostage situation in Texas. Bravo to the FBI. They stormed a synagogue where a British man seeking to free an Al-Qaeda terrorist took four hostages. The FBI stormed the bank. The man named Malik was killed. I'm not sure yet if he shot himself. The rabbi, Charlie Citron Walker. Rabbi Citron Walker got big thumbs up from everyone. Calm, cool, collected leader. And the United Kingdom has confirmed that the hostage taker was a British citizen. Bad weekend for Joe Biden. Selena Zito will be along. Her column this week, the moment Joe Biden finally lost his credibility. It's about Atlanta. But in the Telegraph of Great Britain, Freddie Gray has a devastating column. Joe Biden's presidency is lurching from crisis to catastrophe. That's right, crisis to catastrophe. British politics may seem particularly degenerate this week, writes Gray. Yet Boris Johnson's troubles are nothing as to the pile of disasters engulfing America's commander-in-chief. Joe Biden's leadership is a catastrophe and getting worse. January 6th, seditious conspiracy. A lot of people talking about it. Remember, I think it's a grand total of 10 people. Does not involve any senior officials. Just remember that. Maxine Waters attacked Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema this weekend. We have that. I think we should play that. Cut number 12.
Of course, we have Republicans who are basically following Trump and the kind of division that he's causing among not only, you know, people of color, but the kind of divisions he's causing between the so-called haves and the have-nots. And so Republicans are not going to confront Trump. They're going to do whatever they're told. They don't have the spine to stand up against him. And so we're in a difficult position. We have two Democrats, Manchin and Sinema. And they are holding up the Democratic agenda. They have decided that they are going to stick with support of the filibuster, and they don't care whether or not they undermine the rights of minorities and blacks in this country. You know, blacks have fought very hard to make this a stronger democracy.
Not a good tactic to accuse Senators Manchin and Sinema of racism, but Maxine Waters went there. On Friday, after the show, the U.S. Supreme Court accepted an important Establishment Clause case. They're going to hear whether or not a football coach's on-field prayers can lead to his dismissal. Joseph Kennedy served as an assistant football coach in the city of Bremerton. A lower court rejected his claims that the school district suspended him, and that violated his religious rights. They argued his praying after football games with parents and teachers violated the Establishment Clause. It doesn't. I think Mr. Kennedy's going to win. We will see. I think it's going to be a great case to rewrite Lemon v. Kurtzman on. Some colleges loosen rules for the virus, New York Times reports. Why? Well, like Northeastern and Boston, UC Davis, because students aren't coming back. They're going to lose their tuition. You realize it costs $82,000 a year to go to the University of Southern California, and they're on remote learning. Really, who would pay for that? The University of Michigan, my law school alma mater, fired its president over inappropriate emails to a subordinate. When we come back, we'll do the news from abroad. There's a lot of news from abroad. But I got to say, the big story is in Virginia. Do you back Glenn Youngkin? 1-800-520-1234. And his demand to local school districts with his first executive order to get rid of the mask mandate. Allow parents to opt out. I do, and I think everybody does. 1-800-520-1234. And this isn't just a Beltway story, even though it's the Beltway school districts. It's a national story. Masks have got to come off K through 12 kids. They don't mean anything. They don't work. They don't save lives. They're not used in Europe. It's time to get with the program, American schools, and stop ordering your students to do stupid things. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. This bit of the Beatles Get Back when they were recording I Get a Pony, I Dig a Pony was really amazing to watch as a exercise in how musicians make music. I'm joined by Selena Zito, the Yinzer Report. Sorry about Big Ben's last game last night, Selena. He exited and it wasn't pretty.
No, it wasn't pretty. I didn't watch most of it, but I did watch the last game at Heinz Field the week before. And you kind of knew with this team this was coming because he didn't have his A team, hasn't had his A team for a couple years. But, you know, he went with grace personally when he spoke.
And he went into the playoffs. I was rooting for the old guy last night, George Bland, a moment. Let's go to your column, Selena. The headline, "The Moment Joe Biden Finally Lost His Credibility," the first paragraph. "If President Joe Biden's disorderly and lethal Afghanistan withdrawal was the moment that fractured voters' regard for him, then his vicious Atlanta speech last week may be the moment that defines his presidency." I agree. One more paragraph. "Biden bears no resemblance today to the man who ran for president, pledging over and over again to unify the country and restore a sense of calm and normalcy to politics from the day he was sworn into office and signed executive orders, putting thousands out of work in the energy industry. He ceased to be that guy from Scranton that people thought he was." He's at 33% in Quinnipiac. Does he recover, Selena Zito?
I people have been talking about, does he recover since Afghanistan? Which, you know, I've said on this show numerous times, that was the moment. That was the break of trust with the American people. And he's not done anything since then, and that was in August. And I don't think he has the wherewithal to understand where he is with the American people and that he needs to recover from it. And when you don't look at your problems objectively, when you look at them through the prism of the people that are surrounding you and telling you you're fine, you're great, you're going to be great, this is just the media beating you up, whatever they're telling him, he's believing that, and he's not believing the evidence that exists among the American people or in the polling.
And Selena, when I was watching the Atlanta speech and I was watching it live, and I saw the president veer off into George Wallace, Jefferson Davis, and Bull Connor land, I turned it off. I'm just not going to be insulted by a president. And I think a lot of Americans will not be insulted by a president. And then I saw Maxine Waters comparing Senators Manchin and Sinema to racists, saying that they were against black rights. I mean, this does not fly. It does not work.
No, it doesn't fly. And it hasn't flown. Look, you know, I think some of the things that we missed, some of the lessons that not we, but the Democrats missed in 2020, is that while Donald Trump lost the election, and he lost it narrowly, but he did lose it, what they missed is how much the Democrats didn't win under below Joe Biden. And I think that is important to understand is because that entire year of 2020, people were told every day how racist they were. There were signs in the suburban neighborhoods about, you know, he has no place here, or you know, this sort of superiority lecture that was in everyone's front yard, the ads, corporations, NFL, NBA, everyone was telling everyone how terrible they were, how racist they were. And yet they still went out there and voted conservative. They still went out there and voted Republican. And I think that is an important nuance to understand in that people were lectured in that cycle and they defied them. And I think this racist thing that you throw at people every time they don't agree with you has tired. It's worn. It's over.
I think that's one of the reasons why Latino votes are moving to the GOP.
Absolutely.
Is that they perceive the Democratic Party is not about working people. It's become about African-American agendas, primarily the progressive left's agenda for African-Americans, which isn't the African-American agenda. I thought Glenn Youngkin did a very smart thing, not only in abolishing mask mandates, and there will be a fight, and it will be a national fight. I want your take on that. But also by taking off the diversity, inclusion, equity website. You get 1 minute. What do you think about those two things, Selena?
I absolutely agree. Look, he went in there and did the thing he was supposed to do. Roll his sleeves up. First of all, visually, roll his sleeves up and say he's taking care of the roads and bridges during the snowstorm, but also that he was going to undo the very things that were tearing people apart. You know, I mean, if you talk to a black voter, they will tell you they're nowhere near where white liberals are on so many issues. They don't like people tearing people apart. And what Youngkin did was part of removing that.
Selena, it's a great column. You got there about the same time that the British Telegraph Freddie Gray got. And I hope people go to the Washington Examiner and read your column, or go to selenazito.com and get everything that Selena writes sent to you in your email box. Happy Monday, Selena. Sorry we're in the offseason for the Steelers. I'll be right back, America. Should Glenn Youngkin's attack on the mask mandate succeed? Should the courts back him up? 1-800-520-1234. Connection to the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Of course, we have Republicans who are basically following Trump and the kind of division that he's causing among not only, you know, people of color, but the kind of divisions he's causing between the so-called haves and the have-nots. And so Republicans are not going to confront Trump. They're going to do whatever they're told. They don't have the spine to stand up against him. And so we're in a difficult position. We have two Democrats, Manchin and Sinema, and they are holding up the Democratic agenda. They have decided.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Maxine Waters throwing darts at Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. I'm joined by Jake Sherman of Punch Bowl News. My Punch Bowl News isn't here yet, and I'm starting to get shakes, Jake. I always start the day with Punch Bowl News, and it's not here. I thought maybe you were taking Martin Luther King Day off, but I'm told it's in the mail.
It is, yes. I'm looking at the screen right now. It is 71% sent to our list, and it'll be out. It says finishes sending in about 3 minutes. I'm not sure, but we decided, I think just because of the federal holiday, we decided to take it easy and get up a little bit later this morning, although I was up at regular time. And also, I think we had a statement under embargo. You might want to talk about this. I'm sure you know this. A bipartisan Senate congressional delegation is on the ground in Ukraine, obviously with the tensions quite high and quite hot. It's a very important trip.
The CODEL is there, and I'm not sure who's on it, but it does make sense. Tell us, Jake, if you will, where you think the Democrats are about finding something that's not Build Back Better, but something to get through the Senate, because Joe Biden's just absolutely stuck and falling and flailing.
Well, Hugh, it's funny that you say that, but that is something we explore a little bit this morning. I would have to imagine that we kind of lay out in the newsletter this morning how we see the next 8 or so weeks, a little bit less than that. I have to imagine that after we get past this voting rights situation in which, you know, the Senate's going to fail to get cloture on the voting rights bill, I have to imagine that much of February will be spent trying to get some sort of deal on Build Back Better. Obviously, with inflation as it is, it's going to be difficult for Joe Manchin to come along. But the president is addressing Congress March 1st, his State of the Union, a little bit later than usual this year. And with the State of the Union, you have to imagine the president is going to want something to talk about. And I have to, based on our reporting, that something is going to be some sort of Build Back Better. But they're nowhere right now. I mean, it's important to note that they're absolutely nowhere right now.
Now, I wonder if, from your reporting on the Hill, the widespread impression that the Atlanta speech was a disaster. And I got to comment on that night with Brett Baer on Special Report. And I was so easy for me to say I turned it off. It was off the rails and crazy. Now it is generally understood, I think, by independents and Republicans to be off the rails and crazy. But there you have Maxine Waters supporting the president. Did he shore up his base or did he shatter the party?
I'm not sure. I think he shored up his base. I don't think he shattered the party. I think he shored up his base. But, you know, listen, even Nancy Pelosi had what to say about that speech. Dick Durbin said his rhetoric might have been a little too hot. And he went, interestingly enough, he was on the Hill for Harry Reid's lying in state, and he stopped by Mitch McConnell's office. McConnell did not see him, was not there. He told me they were not able to connect. So let's just say this. Last week was a really bad week for the president of the United States. I don't think, like Mitt Romney said, he's had a year of bad weeks. I think he's had good weeks. There's no question about it. He's had good weeks. But last week was not one of those good weeks.
Yeah, Mitt Romney was on Meet the Press yesterday with Chuck Todd. Let's listen to the senator from Utah, who, along with Susan Collins, probably is the left edge of the Republican Party. He's a center-right guy, but he's the left edge of the Republicans in the Senate. Cut number 10.
Well, there's no question but that the nation is severely divided. President Biden said he was going to try unite the country. Obviously, as you pointed out in the last segment, his comments in Georgia did not suggest he's trying to pull us back together again. He's got to recognize that when he was elected, people were not looking for him to transform America. They were looking to get back to normal, to stop the crazy. And it seems like we're continuing to see the kinds of policy and promotions that are not accepted by the American people. Look, James Carville just said that, you know, he's had a bad week, but not a bad year. No, as a matter of fact, he's had a bad year. He's had 52 weeks of bad weeks. I mean, people are 7% poorer now because of Biden inflation. Gasoline prices are, 50% higher than they were when he took office. The border is a mess. COVID was resurgent. But he didn't have in place the tests people needed to keep themselves safe. And then, of course, there was a disaster in Afghanistan. Russia's now threatening Ukraine. Things are not going well. And the president needs to stop and reset and say, what is it he's trying to accomplish? And if it's to try and transform America, he's not going to unite us. Bringing us together means finding a way to work on a bipartisan basis. He had one success, the infrastructure bill, and that was done by Republicans and Democrats in the Senate working together. Build on that kind of success.
Now, I think Mitt Romney, when you've lost Mitt Romney and he says you've had a year of bad weeks, that's pretty devastating to the president's ability to move a 60-vote measure, isn't it?
Yes, but I would argue, and this is a larger argument, I'm not sure the country can be brought together in the way that Biden suggested it could be. I do think that the infrastructure bill was a good example about how to create kind of heat and then build off of that. And we might yet see that with voting rights, too. I actually don't rule that out when it comes to this voting rights push by Susan Collins and other people like Mitt Romney. So all that said, I hear what he's saying, and I do think there's a chance for additional kind of work in that respect.
Well, you know, let's be clear about voting rights. Voting rights is, and when Democrats talk about voting rights, they're talking about federalizing elections. When Republicans talk about it, they're talking about reforming the Electoral College Act, an 1896 act or an 1876 act that does need reforming. So that's obviously on the table, but you're not going to generate the base. You know, what I have to think right now, Jake, is that some Democrats still have to be looking at retirement. Do you think we'll get any more Democratic retirements in what is already a banner year for them running for the gates?
Yes, I do. I think I line up with McCarthy on this, and he thinks they'll be close to 30. I think that's probably right. I think we could see some more in the next couple of weeks. And just on the voting rights thing, the key to that will be whether they're willing and able to go beyond the Electoral Count Act to other. I mean, Susan Collins has mentioned protecting election workers, renewing some election grants. So there are options beyond that. The question is, can they get it to a place where it doesn't look like it's a replacement for what the Democrats are doing? And I think politically that will be important. But, you know, Manchin has said time and time again, and there's some truth to this, if Biden wanted to pass the things that he says he wants to pass, he needs more than a 50-50 Senate. That's just the reality of it. And I think that's right. You have to work with the Senate you have, not the Senate you want.
Now, Jake, I'm curious. I've got Carla Sands coming up, the former ambassador, who is running for the Senate seat in Pennsylvania. That went from being an endangered Republican seat to now having not just Dr. Oz, but McCormick, the investment banker, and Sands, the ambassador. All of a sudden, you have three strong Republicans, maybe four, and I think his name is Bardo. What do you make of that race now? What do they talk about on the Hill?
Well, I would say McCormick is an interesting, will be interesting to see. I think McCormick and Dr. Oz are two very, very interesting candidates. McCormick is going to get hit on Bridgewater, his former employer, and their heavy investments in China. And we saw Ray Dalio, who was his boss and the founder of that firm, basically say on television on CNBC a couple weeks ago that he can't have any issue. He can't control what China does in the human rights realm, and he's not going to not invest there because of what they do, something to that effect. I have to imagine that McCormick is going to get hit on that. He says he disagreed with some of their policies on China, and that will be an interesting race. Dr. Oz, I mean, Dr. Oz is one of these new candidates that's born out of the Trump era, right, Hugh? I mean, it's a person who's neither McCormick nor Oz have lived in Pennsylvania in recent years. They're both from Pennsylvania in some respect. And Sands is all up on TV trying to grab the mantle of Donald Trump, so a very interesting race. We'll have to see who comes out of the Democratic primary, too. Will it be Fetterman, John Fetterman? Will it be Connor Lamb? All very interesting.
I'm rooting for Fetterman, of course. But Carla Sands coming up, the ambassador to Denmark under President Trump, is self-funding, as is McCormick. Can the other two, can Dr. Oz match that kind of money very quickly, Jake?
I will have to see. I mean, I don't think so. Self-funding is a huge advantage in a race like this.
Yeah, especially if you've got McCormick kind of capital. And married to Dina Powell, Trump appointee. Jake Sherman, punchbowlnews.com. Go get your Punchbowl News. Sign up and get your free newsletter in the morning. Happy Martin Luther King Day to you, Jake. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Good year. Everybody let the hair down.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening. I'm joined now by Ambassador Carla Sands, former United States Ambassador to the Kingdom of Denmark. She served 4 years under President Trump in that position. She is now a declared candidate for the Senate nomination on the GOP side in the Keystone State, the Pennsylvania primary. Good morning, Ambassador Sands. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Thank you, Hugh, and thank you to your listeners.
Let's begin by doing bio. First of all, your campaign website. What is it, Ambassador?
Well, my website lays out a little bit of my story, how I grew up in the center of our great Commonwealth in Cumberland County, and my Pennsylvania ancestors fought in the American Revolution and in the Civil War. And, Hugh, this is our time to fight for our country and for me, our Commonwealth, because I feel like the left is attempting to really take over this country in a way I've never seen. I went to high school and undergrad in Pennsylvania, practiced alongside my father in our third generation chiropractic office as a doctor of chiropractic in Camp Hill. And then I went on to run our family's company when my late husband suddenly passed away. And that's when I met President Trump. At that time, he was Donald Trump. I am the only candidate in this race that helped raise money for him, worked hard to help him get elected. And he then appointed me to his Economic Advisory Council and then his ambassador to the Kingdom of Denmark.
Now, Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania is your home. You end up marrying...
Well, I live in Camp Hill. It's in Camp, okay. Town over. Yeah.
But you were originally from Mechanicsburg, right? That's where they built the Conestoga wagons. That's why I know about Mechanicsburg.
That's right. So I lived in both places as a child. Yeah.
Okay. And so you come to L.A., you get married to Fred Sands, who's legendary. I was in the real estate lawyering business for 30 years, so he's legendary. Okay. So you're legendary.
He was.
So I'm curious as to how your California years compared to your Pennsylvania years.
Sure. Well, you know, I was practicing with my dad at our chiropractic office when I got an opportunity. It was an opportunity to go to Los Angeles and do a soap opera, and I didn't want to go, but I took it. And so I did that for a few years and a couple of movies and primetime TV, lots of commercials. And then I sat for the board and practiced as a doctor of chiropractic in L.A. And that's when I met my late husband, the love of my life. And we got married and had a daughter together. And we worked hard to raise money, like Ronald Reagan said to do, to help get elected the most conservative person that you can. So we raised money for a lot of Republican politicians.
Oh, and speaking as a Californian who was active in Republican politics and media, Fred and Carlos Sands did yeoman's work. Now you're back in Pennsylvania. You've moved back there. Tell us about the time in Denmark and your experiences representing the United States and the Kingdom of Denmark, which was it's a vigorous member of NATO. I'm not sure they're spending their 2%, but they're a vigorous member of NATO, and they have deployed alongside our troops in hotspots around the world.
That's right. So I moved to Copenhagen in 2017 with my then teenage daughter, and she finished high school together. And I worked with our great team at the embassy there. And we really did great things. For one thing, we got Denmark to increase their NATO spending in a non-budgetary year. I went on this Navy military vessel, and they said, well, do you want to see the missile silos? And I was like, absolutely. And we go in and we see these giant missile silos, but inside there were no missiles. So I said, well, where are the missiles? Oh, Madam Ambassador, we don't have the money to buy the missiles. So you can imagine every media hit that I did, I talked about no missiles in the silos, and we did get them to plus up. But I also was able, with my team, to increase U.S. exports to Denmark over 22% in just 1 year. So we created thousands of jobs here at home from Denmark. We also were able to secure the Arctic region, the region of Greenland and around there, and the GIUK gap. I worked with the Pentagon, the White House, the State Department, Commerce, Energy, Interior, the Senate Armed Services Committee, and the Senate and Congress to get that done. And the Department of Defense awarded me their highest civilian honor, the Medal for Distinguished Public Service.
Now, Ambassador Sands, we have I don't know if you're a Steelers fan or an Eagle fan, but we don't like Steelers fans here because I'm from Cleveland. So I make fun of the Steelers fans. So I'm going to slow this down for the Steelers fans. Denmark owns Greenland. The Chinese tried to get in there, and Donald Trump, I gather, using you and Mike Pompeo and Robert O'Brien and others, blocked that. Would you explain that to people, what was going on there?
Sure. First, let me set the table. Denmark is a kingdom with Greenland and the Faroe Islands. That's part of the kingdom, but they really are semi-autonomous. So they have home rule. They're able to make their own laws more or less, except for some carve-outs. What happened was when I arrived there, we hadn't had a relationship with Greenland for 67 years, and China and Russia were all over the place. China attempting to do things like buy our old U.S. deep water port on Greenland, build and finance airports. Russia has, and this is open source, I'm not stating anything that's classified or secret, they have their subs all over the place, and they're causing a lot of trouble. They have, for instance, missiles on their icebreakers, and they've got about 40 of them. They're very militarized. And so we hadn't had a robust defense, I'll say, in the region. And so I brought attention to this region, and working with the incredible people like NSA, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, others at the NSC, President Trump. And President Trump was the third U.S. president to offer to buy Greenland. It's not like it was a one-off.
No, it wasn't. But some people made fun of him. It would have been a great thing if we could have done that, but we didn't.
That's right.
So tell me, Ambassador, about the race for Senate. Why get involved? You've been raising money for years. You can sit back and enjoy life in Pennsylvania, visit your friends on the West Coast occasionally, go back to Denmark and see your friends, and return as an ambassador or another appointment in the next Republican administration. Why go into retail politics?
That's what Mike Pompeo said. Secretary Pompeo is like, why do you want to do this? Here's why. As I mentioned earlier, I have worked very hard to help President Donald Trump get elected, and really every other prominent Republican candidate, knowing that our party is the party of strong families, strong small business, constitutional freedoms. But what I saw was that the left is taking, you know, they take an inch and another inch, and we're always on the defense. And it seemed like our politicians aren't working for us, that they like their cocktail parties and they go to Washington and go along to get along. I'm always on the offense. I understand. I have a 21-year-old daughter, and I want to leave the world, our country, in a better place than when I got here. And I fear we are losing our country to the hard left. We're getting the Bernie Sanders AOC agenda out of Washington. And so if you're not, if what you're doing is not working, you know, you have to do something different. And I thought, well, I'll never back down. I'll run. And it really is a calling for me. You can see the endorsements that I'm receiving from people that I worked with in the Trump administration and former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. He knows he supports President Trump's policies. He supports a strong border, the rule of law, you know, the fact that we had peace around the world. And he understands the working people of Pennsylvania, they need more support and care. We have to promote things like Pennsylvania gas industry, our Pennsylvania farmers, which this Green New Deal stuff that they're stuffing in all of these multi-trillion dollar bills has to be rolled back. I'll work to defend that. He knows I'll defend our kids and work to ban CRT at the federal level, just like Governor Youngkin did in Virginia yesterday.
What is the primary date, Ambassador Sands? When do you actually vote?
It's probably going to be in May, but we haven't finished our redistricting, so it's a little bit to be determined.
Now, your Supreme Court, Pennsylvania Supreme Court, sort of kicked off the chaos of 2020 when they redistricted the state over the wishes of the legislature. It's a liberal Supreme Court, and I think whoever our nominee is, our being Republican, I'm a Republican, everyone knows it, is going to be up against this Fetterman guy, the giant lefty. And I mean, he's a big man. He's also charismatic. What do you think about him as a opponent?
He's raised more money than anyone in this race. They love him on the left. He's to the left of Bernie Sanders. Pennsylvania does not want to send a hard leftist populist to Washington to represent them. And I truly believe I'm the only candidate in this race who can beat John Fetterman at the polls. Here's why. Our base knows I'm the only one who worked for President Trump who can be trusted to take America first and Pennsylvania first policies to Washington to fight for them every day. I'm also the only candidate who has supported the party over the decades, year after year. I can hold that big middle together because we have a big tent party, and then I'll be able to attract some suburban voters because they'll understand America first, Pennsylvania first policies mean safe streets in the, not just the city of Philadelphia, but the suburbs too, where we're having a lot more crime. So I will work to put forward President Trump's great America first and Pennsylvania first policies every day in Washington on behalf of Pennsylvanians. They know that. They know I'm the only one they can trust.
Okay, last question. Obviously, Mr. McCormick is going to have a lot of funds. Mr. Bardos is a experienced candidate, and Dr. Oz is a celebrity. So what is this primary race going to be about? I know you're already up on TV, I believe. Am I right about that, Ambassador?
Yeah, I was up on TV for months before everyone else. So, yes, I have that first mover advantage. I have a lot of support throughout the Commonwealth. We have almost 900,000 primary voters that we have to reach. It's a very big Commonwealth. And I'm the only candidate in this race, people know this, who fought for the America First agenda for the entire Trump administration. There are others who say, oh, I'm America First. Yeah, since they've been in the race. But, you know, I'm focused on the voters of Pennsylvania, and we feel great about our chances in May.
Has President Trump endorsed? Do you expect him to endorse?
Well, of course, everybody would love to have his endorsement, but I never get ahead of President Trump. What I'm proud of is that I served in his administration, and I served with distinction and honor, and I'm concerned about the voters of Pennsylvania. They have not been well served. Our Commonwealth has been diminishing over the last four decades. There's no reason for it. We're a powerhouse of energy, number two only to Texas. We have some of the best higher education institutions in our country, and we have world-class health care. With those assets, we should not have just lost a congressional seat and $1.7 billion to our GDP. in 2019, which was a stellar year.
Yeah, the biggest impediment to Pennsylvania ambassadors is next to Ohio, and people just would prefer to live in the Buckeye State. That's the biggest impediment. But I thank you. Tell me the web address for Sands.
Thank you, Hugh. So please go to carlasands.com, carlasands.com. We're getting throughout our Commonwealth. Our team is traveling. I'd love to come to your area and talk to your group. Just reach out to us. I'd love to have you volunteer for our movement. And humbly, I hope for your support.
CarlaSands.com. Thank you, Ambassador Sands. I love
Thank
talking.
You.
I love talking to candidates. It's going to be a wild primary. I'm going to talk to them all. Maybe I'll do a debate up there. I've done them already in California, Minnesota, and Ohio. Another one is coming up in February. Two more are actually coming up in February. I have moderator credentials. If they stipulate to my rules, 30-second questions, 75-second responses, a bell that's a hard bell, no right of reply, I'll go anywhere to help Republicans moderate a debate.
Because you're a sweet and lovely girl, I love you.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Josh Kroshauer is with the National Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Hotline Josh. Josh, I've spent most of the morning talking about Glenn Youngkin's inaugural address, his first executive order, his second executive order, and now the immediate rejection of his authority as governor to mandate parental choice vis-a-vis masks by the Arlington School District. What do you think of this as a political and a legal issue? I think it's big. I think it's important. I think it's going to presage a lot of politics of 2022. But what do you think? Hotline Josh.
It is a big political move, not just for the governor, but where the politics of education go over the next year. Governor Youngkin is positioning himself a little more like Ron DeSantis than Larry Hogan across the river in looking to really pick a fight with the very blue, very Democratic counties outside of Washington, D.C. It's not just Arlington, it's Fairfax, Alexandria, all those inner suburban counties outside Washington that have insisted on maintaining the mask mandate for the time being, at least. I think Youngkin looks like he wants to pick a fight, and he's given these counties 8 days till the 24th to allow them to interpret the guidance to make moves to accommodate into the new executive order. But they're not going to go silently in the night, and this is, I think, going to be a very heated fight over the next week over what the school policies are in these suburban counties.
I think it's a set-piece battle that Youngkin decided to pursue in the first week as a means of telegraphing to Republicans nationally who he is and what he intends to do. But I also think he won on this issue. And if he hadn't delivered, he would have lost an enormous amount of his popularity immediately.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the thing that positions him in a more aggressive posture is that he's, unlike some Republican governors, probably the majority of Republican governors, he's suggesting that he's going to try to overrule the counties. So some Republican governors have said, let's let the counties, local rule, let them make the decisions. These are very Democratic counties. I would imagine a majority of the parents in Arlington and Alexandria would still support the mask mandate. So there is a little bit of tension with the local aspect, the local rule aspect of his movement. But at the same time, the science has moved in his direction, right? The science shows that if you want to wear an N95 mask for a child, the child is protected. So you can, but we didn't know that, you know, several months ago when some of these fights started to take place. We now know that, the cloth masks are more symbolic than actually doing any good to protect kids from Omicron or any of the other variants.
We also know that Omicron is a much less virulent form of the disease.
Yeah, less virulent, and with kids, you know, they never, a child.
Actually, let me correct that. It is more virulent, less deadly. It's much more contagious. It's just much less deadly.
Right, and I think, look, a lot of I can speak from personal experience. A lot of parents in this area living in Fairfax County are still very concerned given the widespread of Omicron, even though it isn't as deadly, as doesn't cause at the same rate of hospitalizations as the previous variants did. But there's still a lot of anxiety in the Northern Virginia area. So he is, Governor Youngkin is picking a fight. I think it's a fight that there are a lot of folks in the middle that are like, yeah, we need to get an end. We need to have a way to get rid of these mask mandates at some point. He's picking an aggressive fight early on, but it's one that may determine the success or failure of his governorship here in Virginia.
Now, when he was asked the question by WTOP, he responded he would use all authorities, which I believe he means he will sue these counties. He's got a new attorney general. I would nevertheless select a special counsel like Paul Clement or someone like Ilya Shapiro to bring the argument. It will go to state court first, whether or not his emergency power overrules the local school districts, but it could end up at the Supremes. Do you expect that they will go and brace themselves up with outside counsel or rely on the same district attorney who's been enforcing mass mandates?
Yeah, so I haven't heard anything about their legal strategy. As you note, we now have all Republicans in statewide office. It was a clean sweep, and you have an attorney general in Jason Meares, who is going to be the lead legal point of contact in the state. So, you know, everything that they're telegraphing suggests they're going to be addressed. I'm expecting a fight. He's given the counties, all the counties in the state, till the 24th to accommodate the new order. But from his rhetoric and frankly from his interview on Fox News Sunday, the governor has been a lot more aggressive, a lot more eager to kind of live up to his campaign message on education than a lot of folks expected.
Do you think, as I do, that this becomes a proxy battle for every state, every district? I think he's actually positioned this perfectly. Inside the Beltway district takes him on. It gets national news media attention. I think everyone is going to follow this.
For the Republican base, taking on literally you're taking on like these very blue counties right outside of Washington. I don't know if you saw this, Hugh, but Jen Psaki, who's apparently her kids are in Arlington County Public Schools, you know, already picked a fight with Governor Youngkin on Twitter, saying that she wants them to keep the mask mandate, and she's glad Arlington County Schools has the mask mandate. I mean, this isn't just a fight in another state. This is literally right outside the nation's capital.
It's
outsized attention.
It is a proxy battle on this issue for the entire country. The governor should not respond to Jen Psaki, though. He shouldn't punch down. He should go to court. Josh Crosshour, I'll be fine. I know you're covering this. Hotline Josh on Twitter. It's significant, it's enormous, because it's the governor, duly elected, taking on the new Rome of the blue suburbs outside of the Beltway and legacy media. I'll keep you updated on it, as will Josh, if you follow him at Hotline Josh. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Generalissimo. Have a great Martin Luther King Day. I'll be back tomorrow on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.